Greetings, and welcome to Bear Soup. News, interviews, skews, and schmooze for the online Ursine community. I'm your host, Ron Serratia. We have a fabulous show for you on full boil in this 81st edition of Bear Soup. So, listen up, bears. First, an update on Amit Yildiz. Selections from Jack Passion's The Facial Hair Handbook, including a discussion of length versus girth. Re-election discussion, including Leather Bears on The Stephanie Miller Show. Julie Brown's parody that features gay polar bears. And a selection from Hunter S. Thompson's book, Hell's Angels, on what might or might not constitute homosexual activity. Shoutouts and the usual bear-themed hoo-ha. We're locked and loaded, so stand back. You're just in time for Bear Soup. Following audio from a YouTube video of a press release on the trial of Amit Yildiz by Amit's surviving partner, Ibo John. Amit Yildiz was shot dead in front of his flat on July 15, 2008. He was murdered because he was living gay in public. His family threatened him with death in case he would not allow himself to be healed. Amit might still be alive if the denunciation because of the death threats had been taken seriously by the prosecutor. The prosecutor was unable to take the necessary steps for the security of Amit, who looked for shelter in vain. A civilized constitutional state has to take care for the rights of its inhabitants. This must also be true for Turkey. Amit's right for living was mistreated. This is an ignorance against human rights. Mistakes have been made. My demand is that the court will correct the mistakes made. The murderers have not been captured yet. On September 8, 2009, the trial against the father, Yahya Yildiz, who was absent, was opened. The prosecutor reproached the father with the following crimes: buying unallowed weapons and munitions, the carrying of a weapon, the planned and intentional murder of a human being, the murder of a near relative, and bodily injury. The father is on the run. Curiously enough, he cannot be found. The whole case so far does neither calm my conscience nor the public opinion. The public was arbitrarily shut out of the trial. For those who want to follow the trial and those who want to bring the real truth to light and those who believe in justice, for all those people, the court must be open. The trial must be transparent, fair, and neutral as far as the law for equal treatment is concerned. I want to speak to the family Yildiz now. Amit loved his mother, his father, his brothers and sisters. Very often he told me that he loved them. He very honestly hoped that they accepted him personally. He had hoped that they understood that he told them that he loved them. He very honestly hoped that they accepted him personally. He hoped that they understood his feelings, that they might be really true friends. But his family used his love as an ace. They wanted a medical treatment. He denied that treatment. He had to go on without his family. He thought as time goes by that they would accept him as he was. He was honest, and he was proud of his honesty. Amit wanted to gain his family's respect, but instead of embracing him because of his honesty, they shot bullets into his unprotected body. They shot him and ran away. They were not even respectful, facing his dead body. They were inhuman and dishonorable. If his death is a burden for your conscience, if you cannot live any longer with the family that murdered him, then come out and fight for his rights. Show the public that it is dishonorable and unworthy thing to murder a human being. Show them how you feel having murdered someone. Father Yahya, do not hide. Surrender instead. Show your regret. Defend the rights of your child like a father. Tell us what was so honorable as to murder your own child. When I stand at his grave, a deep mourning comes over me. I am sure that it would have been Ahmet's will that his life and dying dates would be correctly and fully written upon his tombstone. I demand the correction of these mistakes, and furthermore, that looking after the grave will be assigned to me. I was his partner in life, and I will be his family too. Praise to Allah, I am a Muslim, and I am a homosexual, and I am proud to be homosexual. Because I am looking for the truth, because I am breaking taboos, I have a calm conscience. Those who maintain the opposite do not tell the truth. Our religion says that murdering is the biggest sin, which must be punished very hard. A crime against humanity is just the same as blasphemy. The duty of Islam is to protect life. Islam orders love, mercy, forgiveness, peace, and tolerance. Anyone who does not follow these values is contradicting and acting against Islam. This is my life. Nobody is allowed to interfere. To murder someone does not mean to be honest, but what it really means is to cause pain and to produce hate. To act against one's own sexuality is just the same as to act against one's own life. This is wrong. Not telling the truth is weak to give up. The person who discriminates against homosexuals is sowing not only mischief between the generations, but he is also sowing hostility and stirring up the war between people. Once again, I demand the punishment and arrest of the murderers of my beloved Ahmet. To uncover this crime is a supposition for the following or similar crimes and prevents them from happening. Uncovering and the prosecution of this crime might be a warning. This lawsuit of murder creates a precedent. This lawsuit is the lawsuit of us all. I am here to claim Ahmet's rights. He is a symbol for us. He is the symbol of resistance against cruelty, against tyranny, intolerance, and discrimination. We do not want to be murdered. We want the marriage rights, the partnership rights, as well as the rights for adoption of children. We want equality of rights by law. We want that Turkey to adopt international standards. And we also wish that, with all of our hearts, that Turkey will be more up to date. We demand that Turkey finally start carrying out international treaties which have been signed, conformable to duty. Finally, I say thank you to the members of LGBTT, to the human rights associations, and to the members of the press, and to all of you who put their trust in us and support us. And that was the audio from a YouTube video of Ahmet Yildiz's surviving partner, Ebo John. Check out the Bear Soup blog for a link to the video. The following is from Jack Passion's new book, The Facial Hair Handbook, Every Man's Guide to Growing and Grooming Great Facial Hair, a self-published book. This is from the section called Taste.
There are thousands of ways you can style your facial hair, but first you have to understand the basics. Facial Hairstyles Overview. Until now, there has been little regulation in the naming and classification of facial hairstyles. Every slight variation has been given a name, and in most cases, multiple names. It's too confusing to remember them all, and the silliness in naming only hurts our cause. Additionally, cultural differences preclude our ability to classify with the naming conventions most people have used so far. For instance, mutton chops aren't mutton chops outside America, and Americans don't grow imperial mustaches. For the sake of clarity, let us agree that there are only 5 basic types of facial hair. All facial hairstyles fall into one or more of these categories. Whatever you want to call it beyond that is up to you. Just don't go overboard with it. Most, but not all, people will understand what a handlebar mustache is, but you're just going to look like an idiot telling people your mustache is a dual whisking action soda sweeper. I would probably throw up on you if you said that to me. Sweep that up. The first category. Clean shaven. Entire face and neck is hairless and shaven at regular intervals to maintain hairlessness. Albeit super boring, this is the most common facial hairstyle. Style 2. Beard. A beard covers the entire face, with facial hair extending from the hairline, over the cheeks, jawline, and chin. A beard usually includes a mustache, but it is not a requirement. This is the only facial hairstyle that includes the hair grown on the neck, but more often than not, the neck is shaved. Hairstyle 3. Mustache. A mustache is any facial hair grown on the upper lip and, optionally, the side of the mouth, as long as it does not connect under the mouth. There are more variations of mustache than any other facial hairstyle. Some popular ones include the handlebar, the dali, and the pencil. Style number 4. Goatees or partial beards. A goatee is any hair grown on the chin. A goatee can include minimal growth on the cheeks, but it will not connect to the hairline or cover the entire cheeks and jawline like a beard. Most goatees also grow around the mouth to connect to a mustache, encircling the mouth. These are called Van Dykes. Soul patches, grown right under the bottom lip, are also considered goatees. And as an aside, I'll add that soul patches also called, in fancy terms, mustache. If a goatee and mustache do not connect, they are considered independent entities. Quote, "He's got a sweet mustache and a long goatee," unquote. When connected, goatee will acceptably refer to the union of both. Quote, "He's got barbecue sauce in his goatee. He must be the one who ate the last of the ribs. Get him," unquote. And facial hairstyle number 5, sideburns. Sideburns are 2 sections of hair on either side of the face, grown from the hairline down along the cheeks that do not continue to the chin or to the neck. Sideburns, even at their longest, should stop at the jawline. They can connect to a mustache as long as the chin and neck are bare. When sideburns are very large and cover most of the cheek, they're usually called mutton chops. I encourage you to defy silly naming conventions and just call your facial hair by one of these 5 styles. By doing so, you eliminate the possibility of being lumped in with the stereotypes associated with certain facial hairstyles, and you'll have a better chance of owning your style. Remember, facial hair is unique to its face, so even if you wear a mustache that looks like Zorro's mustache, you don't have to be Zorro. Check out facialhairhandbook.com for updates and pictures of facial hairstyles. And this is from the section called Length versus Girth. Both are great, but girth wins every time. Anyone can grow a long beard, but robust facial hair takes care and attention. Thick facial hair is a sign of health and maturity. Facial hair gets thicker and thicker as you get older, and the only way to get healthy thick hair is to be healthy yourself. Of course, like everything, too much can be too much. Pick a style for your face, get it to a healthy length, and keep it there. It takes a long time to grow long facial hair, and that means you're going to be wearing one style for a long time. Plus, hair naturally gets thinner at the ends due to breakage. That said, a long beard or goatee is an impressive symbol of long-term commitment, one that is authentic no matter what the trends are. However, a long mustache, especially one that covers the upper lip, can be a nightmare. Things like eating and kissing can become exceedingly difficult, and the hairs constantly going in your mouth can drive you crazy. You're going to have to take extra care of a long mustache, and you'll likely want to style it daily. Be careful not to get so focused on length that you end up having a bunch of thin hair. Biologically, hair thins when its host isn't healthy, so you're going to look sick if you've got straggly hair, even if you're in perfect health. A long, nasty beard is going to make you look nasty, but a long, healthy beard is going to stop traffic and inspire the world. If you're going to go long, go strong. And the three S's of style. If you keep one simple rule in mind, you will have no trouble at all wearing your facial hair with style and confidence. If only fashion was this easy. Passion's fourth law of facial hair. Solid, subtle, and sharp. Solid. Having solid arrangements of hair is one of the easiest ways to make you and your facial hair look good. Keep your beard, sideburns, and goatees trimmed to avoid loose, straggling hairs. Don't wear a style that will reveal bald patches. Subtle. I advise against exotic facial hairstyles. While lightning bolt sideburns, initials carved into a beard, and multicolored mustaches are fun, in normal day-to-day circumstances, they're just going to make you look like an idiot. We're trying to look stylish, and facial hair alone is exotic enough. Avoid extremes. Don't grow it too long or too bushy. Curl your mustache, but don't make complete circles. Think elegance, taste, and refinement. You want your facial hair to give attention to your face, not take it all for itself. Sharp. Clean lines look clean, and clean is king. Keep your beard sharp by keeping the lines well-groomed. Whatever your facial hairstyle, shave or trim often to maintain your edges. Sharp lines completely dispel the myth that facial hair is for the lazy. In fact, keeping your facial hair sharp will actually make you look better because it highlights your attention to your appearance. Bonus! Finally, passion's laws of facial hair. Number 1. Healthy man, healthy beard. 2. Good facial hair starts with a beard. 3. Hair growth is about potential. 4. Solid, subtle, sharp. 5. Hair care is a defensive game. And this was from Jack Passions, The Facial Hair Handbook. Jack Passion is a 2-time world beard champion. It's no secret that I'm a fan of the Stephanie Miller radio show and of the show's producer, Chris Lavoy, for whom I have a great, big, throbbing man crush, and who I believe identifies as a bear himself. In any case, this conversation took place with guest star Hal Sparks and Chris Lavoy on Stephanie Miller.
Can I have a happy song, please? Because my happy, clappy liberal friend Hal Sparks is here.
Yep.
Ed Rendell, Pennsylvania governor, agrees with Joe Biden, who says that we should...
Hey, come on, bitches, get it together.
Mm-hmm. We're paraphrasing what Joe Biden said. Yeah. Pennsylvania governor Ed Rendell says liberals need to get over it and support the Democratic Party before they regret it. He said this isn't about President Obama. It's about whether the Democratic Party, not perfect, but certainly bent on trying to preserve theories in government and progressive practices, is going to be in charge of the Congress or the Republican Party. And it's not the Republican Party of old. This is a scary Republican Party.
Yeah.
It's true. It's full of witches. Witches and homophobes and bears. Oh, my. Leather bears.
Don't forget turtles.
Leather bears?
Leather bears. Witches and homophobes and leather bears, oh my. Well, I'm not a witch at all. He said of conflicts he's had with Obama, we ought to get over it. If we've had some issues with President Obama, save them for another day. I agree with him.
That's what I've been saying. It's like, no matter how you feel about President Obama, you can't let these right-wing whack jobs take over. That's you shooting yourself in the foot.
Here's the other thing, too. Then fight for more progressive people in the caucus.
Right.
But don't just, like, hand it over to the Tea Party. That's,
And if you do not need one more reason, they hate puppies.
So whether you're...
Leather bears?
Leather bears.
Or any other bear, get out and vote. The following premiered on the Stephanie Millard Show by Julie Brown, a parody of her earlier song, Everybody Run, the homecoming queen's got a gun. This time, the parody is about Sarah Palin and is called Everybody Run, the ex-beauty queen's got a gun. I thought it would be appropriate to bring it up now, particularly because it mentions polar bears, gay polar bears, including one who says, I swear I'm going to slap the lipstick off that pig. You can
find more about this and buy the music at truliebrown.com. The following is an interesting section from Hunter S. Thompson's 1966 book, Hell's Angels, A Strange and Terrible Saga, from Chapter 7 in the section The Making of the Menace, 1965. The angels are great favorites on the sadomasochism circuit, and although motorcycle hoods as a group are consistently accused of deviant leanings, I suspect the issue was stripped to the bony truth one afternoon by a Frisco angel who said, "Hell yeah, I'll take a blowjob any day for $10. Just the other night in some bar downtown, I had a queer come up to me with a big tenner. He laid it on me and said, 'What did I want to drink?' I said, 'A double Jack Daniels, baby.' So he told the bartender, 'Two of those for me and my friend.' And then he sat down there on the bar rail and gave me a hell of a blowjob, man. And all I had to do was smile at the bartender and keep cool." He laughed. "Hell, and me with four kids and a broad up front, dancing the wig or the wag or something like that. Shit, man, the day they can call me queer is when I let one of them faggots suck on me for less than a tenner. Man, I'd go underwater and fuck fish for that kind of money. You just tell me who's paying." To whatever extent the Hell's Angels may or may not be latent sadomasochists or repressed homosexuals is to me, after nearly a year in the constant company of outlaw motorcyclists, almost entirely irrelevant. There are literary critics who insist that Ernest Hemingway was a tortured queer and that Mark Twain was haunted to the end of his days by a penchant for interracial buggery. It is a good way to stir up a tempest in the academic quarterlies, but it won't change a word of what either man wrote, nor alter the impact of their work on the world they were writing about. Perhaps Monolate was a hoof fetishist, or suffered from terrible hemorrhoids as a result of long nights in Spanish horn parlors. But he was a great matador, and it is hard to see how any amount of Freudian theorizing can have the slightest effect on the reality of the thing he did best. For the same reason, the behavior of the Hell's Angels would not be changed or subdued for a moment if every newspaper in the land denounced them as brutal homosexuals, even if they were. Significantly, I have never heard anyone who had any personal dealings with them endorse the Freudian viewpoint, probably because anyone who spends any time with the Angels knows the difference between outlaw motorcyclists and homosexual leather cults. At any bar full of Hell's Angels, there will be a row of sleek bikes lined up on the curb outside. At a leather bar, there are surrealistic renderings of motorcycle on the wall, and perhaps, but not always, one or two huge, accessory-laden Harleys parked outside, complete with windshields, radios, and red plastic saddlebags. The difference is as basic as between a professional football player and a rabid fan. One is a performer in a harsh, unique corner of reality, the other is a cultist, a passive worshipper, and occasionally a sloppy emulator of a style that fascinates him because it is so hopelessly remote from the reality he wakes up to every morning. According to the Lynch Report, while homosexuals seem to be attracted to Hell's Angels, no information received indicates that the Hell's Angels as a group are homosexuals. They seem primarily concerned with heterosexual contacts. Some heterosexual perversions figure in the police reports, but taken in context, they appear to be means of attracting attention, being different, and perform primarily for the shock impact on others. These and other attention-attracting actions are characterized by the Angels as showing class. Certainly, the Lynch Report is not the last word on the Angels, but the nature and bias of the document is such that any available evidence of their homosexual action would have been prominently mentioned. The report makes so many references to cunnilingus that the word fellatio is conspicuous by its absence. No doubt there are Freudian ramifications even in this omission, but again, I think they are mainly beside the point. Any attempt to explain the Hell's Angels as an essentially homosexual phenomenon would be a cop-out, a self-satisfied dismissal of a reality that is as complex and potentially malignant as anything in American society. Quote, "The motorcycle is obviously a sexual symbol. It's what's called a phallic locomotor symbol. It's an extension of one's body, a power between one's legs," unquote, says Dr. Bernard Diamond, University of California, criminologist, 1965.
The best known public link between outlaw cyclists and homosexuality is a film titled Scorpio Rising. It is an underground classic of sorts, created in the early 1960s by a young San Francisco filmmaker named Kenneth Anger. He never claimed that Scorpio had anything to do with the Hells Angels, and most of it was filmed in Brooklyn with the cooperation of a group of motorcycle buffs so loosely organized that they hadn't even bothered to name themselves. Unlike The Wild One, Anger's creation had no journalistic or documentary intent. It was an art film with a rock and roll score, a bizarre little comment on 20th century America, using motorcycles, swastikas, and aggressive homosexuality as a new culture trilogy. By the time the Hells Angels joined the cultural mainstream, Anger had made several other films with a strongly homosexual bias, and he seemed offended at the notion that he might be so far behind the times as to turn out anything so banal as a topical documentary. Nevertheless, Scorpio Rising played in San Francisco in 1964 at a North Beach theater called The Movie, where Anger was living at the time, upstairs, which advertised the film with a sidewalk montage of Hell's Angels newspaper clippings. The implication was so obvious that even the San Francisco Angels made a pilgrimage to check it out. It didn't groove them at all. They weren't angry, but genuinely offended. Their name, they felt, had been put to fraudulent commercial use. "Hell, I liked the film," said Frenchie, "but it didn't have anything to do with us. We all enjoyed it, but then we came outside and saw all those clippings about us pasted up like advertisements. Man, it was a bummer. It wasn't right. A lot of people got conned, and now we have to listen to all this crap about us being queers. Shit, did you see the way those punks were dressed? And those silly goddamn junk wagon bikes? Man, don't tell me that has any connection with us. You know it doesn't." Anger seemed to agree, but quietly. There was no need to spoil a new boom for the film, and besides, one of the keenest talents in the homosexual repertoire is the ability to recognize homosexuality in others, very nearly without exception. So the phenomenon emerged. The Angels provided the realism that Scorpio lacked. The secret queer factor gave the press an element of strange whimsy to mix in with the rape reports, and the outlaws themselves were relegated to new nadirs of sordid fascination. More than ever before, they were wreathed in an aura of violent and erotic mystery. Brawling satyrs, ready to attempt Congress with any living being and in any orifice. Shoutouts for this show. As always, music by the Mermen. To my homeboys, I mean Bears, the Northeasters of Men, which just hosted a great Halloween weekend at Spooky Bear in P-Town. Good time. To my friends Todd and Heath, in memory of Daddy Mike Dealey, just remember that he will always be in our hearts. Thanks to Joe of BearRadio.net, and as always, to my husband, Rocco. Thanks for listening to Bear Soup with Ron Serratia, episode number 81. Check out the Bear Soup page on our brand spanking new home blog, www.bearsouppodcast.net. Bear Soup is produced for the Bear Radio Network, which is not responsible for the content of this podcast. Bubbles for the Bear Soup Hot Tub are powered by our sponsor, Bear Bones Books. Check out their fine titles by Bear authors and their new catalog at barebonesbooks.com. If your bear business is interested in sponsoring an episode of the show, please email me at bearsoup@gmail.com. Look for Bear Soup and Bear Bones Books also on Facebook. And always remember, sometimes you eat the bear. Sometimes the bear eats you.